Look, I'm a cop, LAPD. How about a little team spirit, huh?
Well, I was in LA once. Hated it.
Well, I can understand. I don't like it much myself.
Hey, that's a plastic fender up there. Take it easy.
Off. I'm doing my job. Right, cut me some slack, will you? Look, I used to be a cop in New York City. I only moved to LA because my wife took a job there. Come on, what do you say? Here we are, Washington, D.C., the heart of democracy. One hand washes the other.
Bring the bags over here.
Come on, man. It's Christmas.
So ask Santa Claus to give you another car. Merry Christmas, pal. I mean,
can we just, before we get to Judd's Keys and Action Movie Rewind, can we just tip our caps to 30 seconds of amazing scene-setting dialogue there?
Yes.
Die Hard 2.
Yes, it's in my notes.
All right, guys. We got 30 seconds to tell the audience that we're in L.A. You're an L.A. cop now. Actually, you're in D.C. You're an L.A. cop, and it's Christmas. All right, go. Let's
and you're
do
from
this.
New York.
And you're from New York.
And your mother-in-law's car is being towed.
And you're still with your wife. 30 seconds. Cram it all in. Federated Insurance is powering this episode of Mackie and Judd, and they've been helping to power business owners behind the scenes, frontline protection and peace of mind for over 100 years. You can follow Federated on Twitter at FederatedINS, where you'll find fresh, relevant risk management content on a variety of topics. So again, federatedinsurance.com is your place to go for trusted resources and to find out just every all the industries they protect and everything they can do for your business. At Federated Insurance, it's always our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
My dream is to be a Hall of Famer and being one of the best receivers at this position. And I just got a long way to go. This is my first year, first couple games of my career. So just got to keep learning and just keep buying into the system and just going out there playing my best ball each Sunday.
Wow. Justin Jefferson with the Hall of Fame talk there. Is that preposterous? Halfway through his first season, or have you got? Because I've seen enough in the first half of the season with Justin Jefferson to say, you know what, it's not really absurd that he could be, if he stays healthy, on a trajectory to be one of the best wide receivers for the next 10 years.
He's really good right now. I need to see so much more. And can he stay healthy? And plus, can he get the right quarterback?
All good things.
Can he get the right quarterback long term?
I saw a couple of them last night on Thursday Night Football that would look real nice throwing to Justin Jefferson.
Do you like how the future of this league looks? Because future of this league, it's like you've got teams like the Bears playing a National Football League video game circa 1997. And then like the Cardinals and Seahawks have delved into 2020. Do you like how that looks?
Yeah, you got like the Cardinals are playing like PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
And the Bears are playing like Super Nintendo, NFL Blitz or something.
The Bears are playing a game from my teenage years is what it looks like.
So Vikings and Cowboys this weekend. Let's get right into it because we have a lot of things to cover between Judd's Keys, A Rap with Royce, and our first sequel in that, like the first time we've reviewed two movies in the same series, Die Hard 2, Action Movie Rewind. But how's Judd's Keys doing after three straight Vikings victories?
Oh,
is he feeling good?
Keys is very, very, very psyched. Keys is predicting 7-5 after the three-game homestand, which includes what? The Cowboys, the Panthers, and Jags, who are combined 6-22. Keys is projecting a playoff berth.
Whoa.
Keys is projecting a lot of things. Keys is counting a lot of things. Count the votes. Count the votes. And Keys is saying he's projecting the Vikings are going to be in the playoffs. Right?
Whoa.
He had a couple drinks last night.
Nice.
And projected a first round playoff win, which I then had to slow him down. I said, Keys, you absolutely have to stop right now.
I'm here for these things.
But it's, he is.
We found out last night, too, because Arizona and Seattle both went into that game 6-3. And with Seattle winning, moving to 7-3, and Arizona losing, dropping to 6-4, if the Vikings win, they'll be one game behind Arizona, and that's the team that you're going to want to root for to fall out of the playoffs, right? If there's only seven playoff teams, and there could still be eight if a game gets canceled, if there's only seven, Arizona looks to be the team that could easily drop out,
which would disappoint me greatly because I do like them. Flat out, as a football fan, if you told me final seed Cardinals, or Vikings. It's not close.
You want the Cardinals?
I want the Cardinals 100. Yeah. If you're a football fan, now I get it. If you love your Vikings, that's fine. But if you are just flat out a couch sitting, I love the playoffs football fan.
You want Kyler in there.
Are you telling me that you're going, man, the Vikings, I mean,
I don't know, man.
I want Kyler Murray.
Playoff Kirk. I need to see if playoff Kirk can rekindle what he did against the Saints last year.
I want DeAndre Hopkins. I want Buda Baker. I want Kyler. I mean, think about that team. That's a fun team.
Yeah, it is a super fun team.
I mean,
I would still rather watch the Vikings in the playoffs, but your point is well taken and that Kyler Murray is super fun to watch.
If you weren't in this town, if you were in Chicago, it's not close, right?
I mean, if I'm in Chicago, I'd probably just stop watching football the rest of the
day. No, you're still watching. No, see, that's the
I've switched to baseball or basketball.
This is the great thing about the National Football League and the differences in teams and QBs now. No, if you're in Chicago, you quit watching the Bears. But you're telling me that you're not watching Russ and Kyler and Joe Burrow? These quarterbacks are fun. You're not done with the sport at all. What you're done with is the old version of the sport that these teams are playing.
I mean, I watched like that game last night. I watched that for 3 hours with just pure envy, just thinking, my God.
That's my point.
Imagine if you had all these amazing Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, Irv Smith running around as this freakishly athletic tight end and Dalvin Cook, and then Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson keeping plays alive. Hey, oh my God, Justin, you know, play has broken down. Just go deep. I'm going to run away from this defensive end, keep the play alive for 3 seconds, and throw you a bomb. Like, oh,
it's the biggest
injected into my veins at some point.
The two biggest changes in sports, I think, in the last 20 years, like the and shifts that are good, are very, very simple to me. Point guard and quarterback play. And I think they're similar. I really do. Like, you think about the point guard in my youth into probably the 90s was what?
Jeff Hornacek.
Dude brings ball
actually,
down court.
He was a
court,
shooting guard, actually.
But dude brings ball down court, right? Stockton. But like, and he could.
Super short shorts.
And you
Mark
are.
Price.
And did you not distribute? You just distributed. That's what you did.
And I feel like your passes,
Mark
if, you,
Price,
if you watch like Mark Price. And you watch like John Stockton, the ball looked like it was 50 pounds. Like they're using all their might to just do like a chest pass
they're
to the corner.
Swinging
you know?
Around. Yeah, you're right.
So anyways, Judd's keys,
all right, Judd's keys
to a Vikings
yeah,
victory
keys.
Over
right.
the Dallas
keys,
Cowboys.
Come here. Give me these.
Judd's keys to the Vikings winning four straight games.
All full of summit. Oh, he gave me five.
Wow, five keys.
He's all excited. See, this is BS because he went down to four when the team was bad, and he swore that it wasn't because the team was bad, but it was. And now he's up to five because he's all excited. I hate false excitement. All right, key number five. Oh, I get what you did here. Key number five, an addendum key. This is just a Hackney headline, by the way, so I'm going to prepare you for this. Not better than Ezra.
Oh my God!
Oh man!
Wow.
The Vikings. Wow. The Vikings have. They practice Wednesday and Thursday without right guard and rookie standouts. Way too strong, but solid rookie right guard Ezra Cleveland. All right. He has an ankle injury. Now I think he's going to play personally, but Keyes is scared that he's not going to play. And if he does not play, no, you are not going to be subjected again to Drew Samia, who I think is still on the COVID list, or at least he was last Monday night.
Yeah, I'm desperately wanting him to stay on the COVID list.
Yeah. See, this is what you brought on. Brett Jones will start, who's gone from the practice squad. In fact, the Vikings got him from the Giants a couple years ago to play center at the time, and he was a disaster.
Seems like it's been a lifetime. Yeah. Since Brett Jones played a game
for
the Vikings.
That's it for that one. Okay, I'm going to throw that one across the room. All right, that was key five.
Key was really good.
Thank God I don't even know the Better Than Ezra catalog, so you've lost me completely now, which is actually very good.
Yeah, you're definitely crazy lucky that you don't know the catalog.
Dallas can't stop the run, so I still have faith that even if Brett Jones does start, that Cook will be able to run the ball, but it would make a difference, and Cleveland's played well to his credit. All right, we're done with that one. Thanks, Keys. Key number four. We move into the ordinary heart of the Keys lineup. Don't let them up. The Cowboys are. Let me count the ways about how horse bleep these Cowboys are. Okay. They're coming off a bye. They are 2-7. They had lost four consecutive games going into their bye. And here's the stat that I think is the most telling. They are a minus 86. Minus 86. For comparison's sake, the Vikings are a minus 11 in point differential. That is the second worst in the National Football League to the New York Jets, who are, and I want to say this slowly, because this is proof that the Jets are not playing a professional sport right now. The Cowboys are minus 86. The Jets are the worst, minus 147.
Oof.
Not even possible.
That's aggressive. So they're on pace to be like close to minus 300 on the season.
Yes, sir.
Which, what's the math? So they're getting outscored by almost, what, like 18 points a game or something? The Jets?
It is it is awful. So the as I said before, the Cowboys are expected to get Andy Dalton back at quarterback after he missed time because of a concussion. Dallas, fourth in the league in passing yards, is not bad, but you need to. So defensively, the key is going to be to jump on the Cowboys early, because I think that there will be, in that offense, a lot of potential give up, but you got to do it early.
The bad news for the Cowboys, too, is they cannot tackle any opposing running backs. So
this stick is to your formula. True. Key number three, this is going to repeat itself for a second consecutive week, but Keys is going to continue to bring this one back until the problem is solved or until the coach is fired. And I don't mean the head coach. Nothing special, part two. All right. The special teams for the Vikings has spent two games bumbling and fumbling its way around the field. 2 weeks ago against the Lions, two blocked punts. One blocked punt is bad, but you're like, okay, it's a blocked punt. But two blocked punts, you actually have to work at.
Yeah.
A bad snap on the extra point in Chicago against a good team probably cost the Vikings that win.
So my quick question would be, so Austin Cutting is the one that rolled the ground ball back on that snap, right?
Yep.
I am not trying to exonerate a special teams coach here who doesn't deserve it, but are there some things that are just like out of the coach's control? Like if Austin Cutting loses focus for a second and rolls a snap back there, do you hold the coach accountable for that?
Well, that's the issue is no. If it was just one problem in that game, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably say that I believe the snapper was coming off the COVID list. Cutting was. So he probably, you know, didn't feel well in the week, didn't get practice time.
Well, he couldn't.
I don't
think he was like knocked on his head. He wouldn't have played if he had felt sick. Like
I don't know. I'm just saying if we took that one thing, right? So let's say we take the one thing and we're like, all right, bad long snap, not the coach's fault. What was the responsibility of special teams coordinator Marwin Maloof was the 104-yard kickoff return for a touchdown by Cordero Patterson and not one but two long punt returns by the Bears. So I think
collectively.
So I think we can take, you know, one block punt. Okay, that's not good, but it's one block punt. One bad long snap. That hurts you potentially, but it's not necessarily the coach's fault. But when we put it all together in the special teams ineptitude stew, that becomes a problem.
That's fair. Totally fair. Yep. On the verge of maybe losing his job.
Marwin
just in time for the holidays.
Getting yelled at by Zim. If your choice was to have Zim undress you on the sideline verbally or just be immediately fired, which one do you take?
I would rather just be immediately fired, probably. Just spare me.
I don't do well with people yelling at me.
Yeah,
wouldn't be good for me.
Spare the tongue lashing.
Like you don't do well, you get mad back or you cower?
No, I cower.
Listen here, maggot.
Yeah,
oh, God.
Yeah.
No,
I'm going to jail. I prefer jail.
Don't yell at me. All right. Key number two as we work our way up in keys to a Vikings win over the Cowboys on Sunday. Oh, okay. Now the headlines are getting a little bit better. Chef's Delight. The Vikings are going to be facing a defense, to Phil's point before, they can't tackle. They've given up an NFL worst 32.2 points per game. That's right. They are last. They're behind the New York Jets in terms of points given up per game. They are second to last in the league in rushing defense, giving up 157 yards per game. And Dalvin Cook has more than 100 yards from scrimmage in all three games since the Vikings bye. This is a stew for... What, Dalvin Cook, let's say 25 carries, approximately 30 touches, right? Yeah. And another monster day. And I don't think the Cowboys, to what we were talking about before, can stop it.
Opposing running backs, or I should say opposing teams, so it's not always just one guy. For the Vikings, it's usually just one guy. But are averaging 157 yards and 5 yards per carry every game and have scored more than a touchdown per game. So, like, yeah, like Dalvin Cook should continue the party here for sure.
But key number one is not Chef's Delight. Key number one is, and this is going to be singular, so I'm changing the song title, The Kid Is All Right. Do you guys remember?
Great song.
Yes, a fantastic song. Do you guys remember when Randy Moss would play teams that passed on him in the draft, and especially the Cowboys, mm-hmm. who back then had, I believe that Jerry Jones had told Moss he was going to draft him, but he would punish the Cowboys like he was intent on doing it. Well, if Justin Jefferson is indeed Randy Moss 2.0, the Dallas Cowboys took a pretty good receiver, CeeDee Lamb, five spots ahead of Jefferson, who mm-hmm. was taken number 22 in the first round. If I'm the Vikings, I think I use this opportunity for a little bit of Moss redo to find out just how much Justin Jefferson would like to stick it to a Cowboys defense that is not very good to start with. This, to me, seems like a real good opportunity. I'm not saying that he's got to get a ton of targets, but I am saying I could see unleashing some impactful nine-route passes to Justin Jefferson yeah. and telling him it's a 3 o'clock game. A lot of people are probably going to see this game potentially. I don't know, but tell him that. And you got a chance to show a team that took that thought CeeDee Lamb, who's good, was better than you. Go show him.
I think there probably is a little bit of that. And as an assistant coach or even a head coach or coordinator, I think you'd be missing an opportunity not to say, listen, Justin, before we board the plane here. Actually, it's they're not going to be on the plane.
Before,
right? It's a home
before
game
we board the bus to yeah, go exactly. to the hotel.
they passed on you for CeeDee Lamb. And also, four or five other teams passed on you, too, I believe, or three, whatever it was, four for wide receivers. So go stick it to them. I think you're onto something here. I actually have a write that down prediction from several months back that has him scoring three touchdowns in this game. Okay. So I'm rooting
for really?
Your.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember that when I came up with that. All right. Yep. So that is key number one. The kid is indeed all right.
Those are Judd's five keys to a Vikings victory over the Dallas Cowboys. It would be their fourth consecutive victory with two more home games in the bag on this stretch here. And you can find a couple quick plugs before we get into Action Movie Rewind. Purple Daily, 7 days a week during the season. You guys have helped us over the last couple of months reach new download records. I think September and October mm-hmm. were both just like monster record numbers for us. So thank you guys for helping us, whether you listen to Purple Daily, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com, or whether you watch it on YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast. And yesterday we had, I believe, the biggest episode of Mackie and Judd ever, our Timberwolves draft recap episode. When you combine YouTube and when you combine podcast over the last 24 hours, I believe it's one. It's definitely the most listened to episode of the year so far.
Nice.
So, thank you guys, thanks for supporting Mackie and Judd, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com. You can also find us on ScoreNorth Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. every single day. And then the second YouTube channel we launched is youtube.com/ScoreNorthMN. So hit us up, give us a subscribe there, and you can see our ugly radio faces and gray beards and Declan's attempt to grow beards.
Yeah, I can't do it. I shaved this morning.
Really, really
buzzes off.
Bad stash, man. Like that peach fuzz grow thing.
Me?
Yeah, it's a bad stash.
Well, I can't grow. Sorry, I can't grow facial hair. It's
Oh, no, I just take the stash off altogether.
The stash is gone, though. Like, I shaved off the stash.
All right. Well, I thought I saw a little bit there on that.
There's a little stubble. I have a little Norelco that I like to use, you know? Mm. It works fine.
Okay.
Are you guys ready for this?
Let's do it.
A little Action Movie Rewind.
Oh, baby. I thought I was never going to see you again.
That's what I thought about you.
Oh, I love you so much.
They told me there were terrorists at the airport.
Yeah. I heard that, too. I love you so much.
John, why does this keep happening to us?
Let's go home.
Please. Nice guess, asshole. I'm a cop. That was a bad guy.
Where's your ID?
On its way to Cleveland?
Welcome to the party, pal.
That's
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
It's that simple. I just shut the area down.
Shit.
And I got everybody from the Shriners Convention to the goddamn Boy Scouts traipsing through here. I got lost kids, lost dogs, not now, later. I got international diplomats. I got a f***ing reindeer flying in here from the f***ing petting zoo. But John McClane, he's got a little problem. Hell, let's shut down the whole f***ing airport. Now, what do you think they're going to say upstairs when I tell them that?
Why don't you pick up the phone and find out?
Because I don't need full f***ing forensics to tell me all this was some punk stealing luggage.
Luggage? That punk pulled a Glock 7 on me. You know what that is? It's a porcelain gun made in Germany. Doesn't show up on your airport x-ray machines here, and it costs more than you make in a month.
You'd be surprised what I make in a month.
What a great exchange. All right. Action Movie Rewind. Every Friday here, I'm Mackie and Judd. We do deep dives into classic and corny action movies. Entirely too deep dives, probably. And this week, so we've done sequels before. We did Rambo 3, we've done Rocky 4, but we haven't done a second movie in the same series. Mm-hmm. We did Die Hard several months back. I believe that was the first time Declan had ever seen Die Hard.
Correct.
And Judd, you had never seen it straight through, or had you seen it? Well,
I think I had seen it a long time ago, maybe.
Okay, so you were kind of new to...
But like, I had never watched it like I watched it that time. Maybe. Like, I broke it down this time.
And so now we're going to do a dive into Die Hard 2, 1990, 2 years after the original came out. I'm guessing the original one came out and they were like, we got to do this again.
Right.
This is awesome. Here's the summary. A year after his heroics in Los Angeles, Detective John McClane, played by Bruce Willis, is mixed up in another terrorist plot, this time at Washington Dulles International Airport, where he's waiting for his wife to land on a flight. That same night, South American politico and drug profiteer Ramon Esperanza is arriving into U.S. custody. McClane takes action when a treasonous ex-colonel seizes control of the airport, threatening to crash every inbound flight unless Esperanza is freed. 69% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Nice.
$70 million budget turned into $240 million at the box office. And I believe this movie generated more profit than the original Die Hard.
Correct.
So this is one of the most successful sequels of all time. Bruce Willis. We had a cameo again by Carl Winslow. Reginald Vell Johnson, career TV cop.
Oh, yeah.
And, I actually missed him.
What do you mean?
I wanted more of him.
Oh, I thought you... Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, he was eating Twinkies for like good. 5 minutes.
And yeah, I know, I know.
Sending faxes.
But I liked him.
And Dennis Franz. Diving into I can't remember if he had played cops before this, but this was one of his high-profile
playing
cop
a complete doofus.
Yep.
Oh, God.
And then there was a bunch of other...
No Sipowicz right there, boys.
No Sipowicz. No,
that was not Sipowicz.
No Sipowicz.
Bunch of other characters you've recognized from other movies here, but let's just get right into it. Judd Zolgad, we'll go around the room here. What was your key takeaway from Die Hard 2?
Oh, I've got a lot, but my key takeaway was it was very clear that the people that did Die Hard 2 had heard enough about Die Hard is not a Christmas film because there's no snow and it's in California, right? They were going to make damn sure that you knew, despite the fact it was released on July 4th, 1990, that you knew this was a damn Christmas film because it never stopped snowing. Like everything they did was, it's cold, you see? There's a tree, Christmas tree, you see? That was my biggest takeaway was there was going to be no confusion about the fact that if nothing else, it was a wintertime film that I believe that Die Hard, if I'm not mistaken, the original is released on July 1st of 88.
Yeah.
And this was released flat out on the 4th of July, 1990. But they were going to hammer home the point that they were making a damn Christmas movie and you are going to get it.
Okay. I was going to save this question for later, but since you brought it up. What is more of a Christmas movie, Die Hard the original or Die Hard 2? So Die Hard the original, so both of these take place on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. Die Hard the original is a Christmas party.
Yep.
He's flying in to a Christmas party.
Yep.
To hang out with his sort of like his wife, but they're sort of separated.
It's
right?
A seasonal traveling for Christmas.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Die Hard 2 also takes place on Christmas Eve. Both included Christmas music at the end, you know, the end credits, if I remember correctly, for Die Hard 1. But in this case, you had snow, So Christmas Eve,
you had snow. Constant snow. It never stopped snowing.
It was great.
I mean, it was completely fake, but it never stopped snowing.
I think you can make a case that this is, and plus they were, it was holiday travel. They were going to hang out with Holly's parents and the kids, right? I think you can make a case that because of the snow, Die Hard 2 is actually more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard 1.
Mm. Oh, most definitely. But here's what I liked. Die Hard 2 showed that they were firmly in on the entire joke. The joke was we are releasing essentially a series of action thriller Christmas films in July continually. So
did they release all these movies? Because there's like five Die Hard.
I don't know, but I just this one to me was hilarious because it became very clear that they're like, yeah, it's July 4th, but it's really a Christmas film this time. So it's so to me it became that the gag itself was going to be pulled off by them.
Yeah.
So I don't really care. I just thought it was the fact that it wouldn't stop snowing ever. Like the whole film, it's just snowing. I thought was
also like
hilarious.
The amount of snow we're talking about definitely would have shut down the airport.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, 100%. Definitely would have shut down the airport. Well, and it never like when McClane kept going outside, it like didn't accumulate. Like he was never, by the end of that film, it would have been snowdrifts. Mm-hmm. Like huge. Right.
Yeah. This is where they need like, they need like a Minnesota cinematographer to come in and like, we need like a snow coordinator to come in and say, guys, it's been snowing like this for 6 hours.
Well, and
here.
They did
like,
have some, because the snowmobile chase, you know, there was definitely, but it was like nonstop snowing blizzard. And yes, you are correct. The airport would have shut down.
Okay.
That
actually, I'm glad you brought up the snowmobile thing here for a second. So Washington, D.C., let's talk about climate for a second. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I just want to pull this up here. Okay. Average temperatures. Average temperatures in December, and I'll even include January here, okay? So Washington, D.C., and I get that there can be, like, deviations. We had a record high here 2 weeks ago, right? It got up to, like, 70-something.
Yep.
So in December, the record high is, or the average high is 48 degrees in Washington, D.C. Average low is 30. January, because we're getting closer to January in this movie, average high of 43, average low of 25. So it definitely does snow a little bit.
Yeah.
But
a little bit.
Are they like fully prepared when it's snowing that much in Washington, D.C. to land planes?
No.
Are they going to have like snowmobiles just sitting around?
Not.
You know,
of course no they're way. Not prepared for that. The airport would have shut down. Actually, that is absolutely correct.
Wouldn't this have made more sense if it took place in New York? But then why would they be bringing in? Why would they be bringing in a terrorist into New York?
Actually,
even know why they're bringing him into D.C.
I was going to say yes. You are correct. I think if you would put this at like JFK, I think it would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Like they obviously didn't care, but yes, I think you're probably right.
Declan, what was your main takeaway?
A key takeaway is that Bruce Willis is the coolest and most relatable hero in our action movie series. Like I love that he's just hanging out in the airport, drinking a whiskey, smoking a cigarette, looking like a normal guy, just a normal dude waiting for his wife to land at the airport. But in reality, he's this badass cop who can somehow infiltrate all areas of the airport, which is supposed to be like one of the more locked down areas that we're ever going to see. And I feel like he's just so relatable. Like
freedom.
Not yet.
Supposed to stay in your seat until the plane reaches the terminal. No frequent flyer mileage for you.
Who are you?
A cop.
A cop?
Yeah. One of the good guys. You see, you're one of the bad guys. And now that I got your sorry ass, I'm going to trade it for my wife.
He's great.
I feel like that's exactly how Declan would talk if he were if he were the good guy in this movie. No frequent flyer miles for you.
No Delta Sky miles for you.
His dialogue. Yeah, dude. Was great. Now,
he's great.
The one thing that I will defend the film on is for that time, the lack of security is actually correct.
100%.
Like back then, you could go to the terminal, basically walk around.
Yeah.
So the breaches in security that we see now actually were possible back then.
Yeah.
Like not all of them, but a lot of them.
I remember even thinking I was on a family trip.
Didn't get into.
I was on a family trip. We actually went a month before 9/11 in 2001. We actually were in New York City and took pictures like with the World Trade Centers. Like we have these haunting pictures a month before 9/11. And part of our trip, I think we bounced around to some different cities and somehow we had a connecting flight in Cincinnati at one point. And I remember like my stepdad made a comment as we were kind of going through. He's like, feels like we have gone through zero security at all. Like there was just like no protocols, nothing.
Yep.
And of course, a month later, but even worse back in like the early 90s. Right.
Yeah, they
did. 80s.
It was very possible.
And okay, you guys bring up actually my main takeaway from this movie, and there's a million other things we'll get into because one of you guys just brought up dialogue.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis's dialogue is definitely honed in this movie. I would argue that like my key takeaway is that the dialogue for the entire movie is so perfectly like dialed up and cheesy. Every single they're definitely forcing F-bombs when they don't have to, but
oh, Dennis Franz is just nothing but F-bombs, right?
Every character that comes into this movie, even if it's like a guy who's on camera for 5 seconds, has to like drop an F-bomb and say something forceful, right? Do you guys remember the scene when we're getting toward the climax of the movie and everyone's all amped up? And you had Dick Thornburg in the bathroom of the airplane, and he's calling into his producers. And the producer's like, what are you talking about? There's no one's gone live with this. And he goes, I'm on the plane. And he tells the producer, like, no, this is all happening. The producer hangs up the phone, turns to some other, like, producer guy and says, you tell the affiliates they have 3 minutes to jump on board. As if it's like he's in the White House, you know, like talking to his general. It's like, these are TV producers.
Yeah.
You tell the affiliates we have 3 minutes to get this.
Everybody has lines. The janitor, the guy who plays the janitor in the basement of the airport has a ton of lines.
Yes. So the dialogue was just like bam, bam, bam for 2 hours.
It became more of a, this film to me became, and this is not a bad thing, but it was more of a cartoon, I thought, than the first one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like it was
once. Like a regular, normal Christmas. Eggnog. Fucking Christmas tree. Little turkey. But no! I gotta crawl around this motherfucking tin can!
He's just narrating.
He does narrate. That's exactly right. He narrates.
Man. Oh, no, I got to do this thing.
And
now.
In the first one, I was in Nakatomi Center. Yep. If you didn't see that one, you should rent it on VCR. But I'm going to explain part of it to you so that you're fully aware of what I did in the first one. So now you're going to be up to speed.
How did I wind up on the wing of this airplane? Does anyone in that moment of crisis, when you're like you're trying to thwart a terroristic plot, you're freezing your ass off and you're maybe about to die yourself. Do you take the time to out loud verbalize your situation, or do you just keep?
No,
that
but he's narrating the whole. He's literally narrating the whole film.
Oh man, I'm about to get T-boned by a semi. This is going to be terrible.
Now I'm running down a runway to try and save a plane that's probably not going to be savable with some type of flair that I have developed. It's McClane.
All right, what was your favorite part about Die Hard 2, Judd?
The dialogue was, I thought, funny. I like that. But my favorite part was actually a killing scene. Because here's the thing about this film.
A lot of good killing
scenes. They find more ways to kill people in this film, I think, like constructive ways than any film. Mm-hmm. Like they shoot them, they stab them, they ice pick them or icicle them in the eye. Like they find different ways. But my favorite one that I thought was actually constructive was the early on ambush of the SWAT team.
Yeah.
When they're going up the escalator and the guy stops it and the guy and the SWAT guy tells the bad guy, turn this thing back on. What the hell are you doing? And he just turns around and goes, you're sitting ducks, and just starts blowing them away. I actually thought that was pretty good because there were some killings that I was like, yeah, OK, all right now. But that one was my favorite killing scene. And then my favorite thing was the fact that throughout the film, the dialogue is hilarious.
Yeah. Declan, your favorite part?
Dennis Franz, easily. Dennis Franz is the incompetent, hilarious airport cop. Like, it's not Paul Blart mall cop status, but he thinks he's like the man in charge. And it's like, you're the airport policeman. Like, you're nearly not that big of a guy. And then also, when I was growing up, there was like small moments where I had to make sure we didn't make a single sound in the house. It was when HBO programming was on for like Six Feet Under and Sopranos and Deadwood. And the other one was NYPD Blue. So I have some of my earliest memories are Dennis Franz on the TV. And also me and my brother making sure we were not to make a single sound. Because if a fork drops in the kitchen, it was DEFCON 1 from my father, who loved all these shows and loved Dennis Franz especially. But I just love Franz's dialogue with him the whole movie. I love that he's an incompetent, basically mall cop. He's my favorite part of the film, easily.
Is he the most incompetent cop you've ever seen in a movie?
Well, that's the best. Like, is he an actual cop, or is he like one of those rent-a-cops? Like,
no, he's an airport cop.
Yeah, he's an airport cop.
He's an actual cop. Okay. Yeah, and he leads the force.
His instinct is wrong at every turn of this movie. Yeah. During a key crisis at an airport,
he is the most incompetent cop with actual in the movie responsibility.
Yeah,
because the Die Hard 1 cop was incredibly incompetent himself, but that was more just like he's outside the Nakatomi Center, right?
Yeah.
I think Dennis Franz, in the films that we've done, I think he is the most incompetent cop with a huge role, and he keeps screwing things up.
Yeah, and he's like, he's not just like a paper pusher guy who's, mm-hmm. like, he's actively, incompetently sabotaging.
Well, and this is going to get to a whole point I've got about this film, but.
Keep going here? Okay.
Go ahead.
I think my favorite part about this movie is the terrorist plot plan.
Okay.
And how, like, I love it for its simplicity. I love it for its flaws. I just want to take you guys through this plot, and I want you guys to help me figure out, like, where does this plot rank in terms of great terrorist plots? We've done The Rock, mm-hmm. where their terrorist plot was, let's take over the abandoned Alcatraz, and let's have missiles that will threaten to fire and kill people in San Francisco, right? Like, there's some great plots.
That's a good plot, but it's a weak leadership in The Rock.
It is. It's fake leadership.
And what you're going to get to is not weak leadership.
No, it is not. It's very dangerous leadership. So the idea here is to take command of air traffic control at a massive airport. By the way, from a church just outside of the airport's grounds, too, which is funny. Like, they brought all this computer equipment in, presumably in 2 hours.
How did they set up that center? It's an incredible feat. I mean, this is 1990, too.
Yeah, I know. It
wasn't as easy, probably, as it might be now.
Like, they couldn't just bring, like, a few Surface Pros and set up and get some Wi-Fi, you know?
They had an actual air control center.
And we didn't have Wi-Fi in the early 90s, so they presumably... They turned like an abandoned church.
They hacked into the system though through the airport.
Yeah,
right.
And then they like wired it.
And they didn't really explain that church was the grounds of the old communication tower until like an hour and a half into the movie, because that's what it's like. Why, how is this even a thing? And then they explained it later.
Right. And then the idea to hold all of the inbound planes hostage by shutting off the runway lights so they can't land and cutting off the communication so they just have to sit up there and run out of fuel. And then you get to make your demands or potentially thousands of people die. I think the flaw in the plan, and it turned out to be their fatal flaw in the movie, was so they wanted Esperanza's plane to land. They were going to take him out of the plane with the corrupt turncoat Marines or Army guys, whatever it was. And then they had a 747 that was fueled and ready to fly away. And my question was like, where were they planning on just flying to without the U.S. military, you know,
catching
them
up
at some point? Like, mm-hmm. So their plan was we may or may not kill several hundred people and draw a ton of attention to where we are right now. We're going to grab this dictator and then we're just going to jump into a 747 and like
Barbados,
fly
right?
to the to Barbados and hang out.
Yeah, they're just going to take off. Yeah.
With no like the Air Force wasn't going to track you down.
This
or
is what
anything.
I want to ask you.
I need to know, like, what would have... We need an alternate ending of, like, if they would have flown away, did they just get away?
No, you're not supposed to ask that question, though. It became very clear you're not supposed to ask that question.
So, all right. Well, what was your... Did you have a take on this, or...?
Yeah, but it's going to tie into my least favorite part, just as far as, like, I'm willing to go along with, you know, these plots, and they make no sense at times, and that's fine. But playing off your plot, okay, let me go through here what had gone on here. So terrorists basically divert where the control tower will be. They, as you said, Phil, shut off all the lights, runways disabled, basically.
Yep.
They essentially cause a passenger plane to crash spectacularly and blow up. They have planes circling. They have... the air traffic control people in a complete panic. It is clearly a terrorist plot of the highest order, and no one else helps but one group of what turns out to be crooked army guys.
Yeah.
Like nobody.
Like there's like eight army guys.
Like it's like, Bruce Willis.
It's Christmas Eve. The army is celebrating with their families. Sorry.
And eight army guys. And no one else shows up at the, like, there's no FBI, I don't think. There's no, there. You would send everybody and they send a crooked group of army guys and John McClane.
Also, wouldn't you think at some point, wouldn't you send as many people as possible out with like flashlights or like okay, how can we light up the runway? My other question is, the terrorists were very clearly waiting for a low visibility snowstorm of some kind. Okay, were they just like on standby on the rare occasion that there's a blizzard in Washington, D.C.?
I didn't even think of this question.
Because if there's not low visibility, you probably still land the plane, right? Like, because you can probably see the ground to some extent.
Yeah.
Like, it made it even harder with no lights and low visibility because of the snowstorm. And I think they alluded a couple times to like, it's really, really rough weather out there. Yeah, it is. This is great for us. So were they like, did they check the forecast 3 days before and see, man.
And as you said, this snowstorm hits Washington, which is, you know, not the norm, certainly. And so now they just get fortunate and they don't try and close the airport down. They just keep, the whole thing. But how do you just have one group show up to help out and McClane and that's it? It's Christmas Eve. Weird. No one else is coming to help us out.
It's Dennis Franz actively trying to sabotage. Yes. It's John McClane randomly there waiting for his wife and then a bunch of corrupt Army Rangers. Like, what is happening?
The best part is that this passenger plane crashes and explodes and it's like this impressive scene, right?
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you're supposed to believe until Thornburg's report in the airport, which is right by where the plane crashed.
Right.
It's still filled with people celebrating their relatives coming in.
Actually, can we get real quick? I'm going to cut in line in the least favorite thing because you just segued into it. My least favorite thing about this movie, you had a British jetliner. Now, they only showed probably like 50 people on this plane, but when they showed the plane from the outset, there's probably like 200
I think he said I have 200 people on it.
Okay.
Something.
Yeah.
And so the sneaky, brutal bad guy move, by the way, like one of the most like efficient ways of killing 250 people that we've maybe ever seen in action movie Rewind.
Yeah.
And so they reset ground level 200 feet below ground level, right?
Right.
So on the computer screen in the plane, the British jetliner guy, who also the pilot was, I can't remember who that guy is.
He's been in a ton of movies.
He was in Con Air. Like, he's been in all kinds of stuff.
A ton of stuff, yeah.
And so they hit the ground quicker than they thought, and so the plane blows up. So we have just witnessed 200 to 300 people die in a plane crash.
Correct.
And yet the end of the movie is this celebration God.
I've got that in my notes. I've got that in my notes. And this plane, like, where did it go? Like, it's just in pieces. They didn't shut the airport down. But what I love is all of the people in the airport, like, celebrating until Thornburg's report. Like, Thornburg's report triggers this mass chaos.
Right, because
not this jetliner crash.
So all the people that are sitting in the airport that don't know that anything's wrong, I think they said there's like 10 or 15,000 people in the airport or something. They're all looking out the window.
Yeah, they have to see.
None of them saw that plane crash and go up in flames.
And it exploded six times.
You'd feel it.
When planes land at the airport.
Yeah. So if you had a jetliner crash on the runway, I think that you'd be aware of it. But I love how the airport's still filled with people at restaurants eating and watching the news where Thornburg comes on. Sorry.
It's hilarious. And it's great. I can't get over, like, you know, the end of the movie is just, it's Dennis Franz, like, hey, gonna rip up your pocket and take it over the weather outside.
Fred Dalton Thompson, good job, McClane.
And there's like barbecued British people just 100 yards away.
Oh, I know. Well, and the jet exploded too on takeoff with the bad guys.
Yeah.
So this, like, you've got jets blown up all over this.
Seriously, like, this was like, there were more people were killed obviously in 9/11, but like, it would be like making a movie about 9/11 or something where hundreds of people die in a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
But oh, we saved that one plane. No, weather outside is frightful.
Holly McClane's safe. That's all we really care about. Bye. See you for Die Hard 3.
Oh my God. One other thing on that. So John McClane blowing up the terrorist plane lights the runway. And so you do see, like, You've got the blown up plane wreckage, and then you've got like the strip where he has the gasoline, right? But the blown up plane wreckage kind of shows you like where you should land.
Yeah.
Why didn't the first plane blowing up act as the same thing?
Right.
The first plane blowing up is also like a flaming, tattered, like planes are landing because, oh, we see a fiery wreckage, and so we can hit the runway, right? I don't know.
I don't know.
Declan, your least favorite part about Die Hard.
My least favorite part is I did not appreciate, I wanted more connection with the bad guys from the first to the second. So like they just basically make up a whole new set of bad guys. Well,
the first set are dead.
Right, but there has to be some type of like people that still want to carry out his like Hans Gruber's plan and that kind of, like I wanted some type of connection from the bad guys from original into a sequel. The second thing is I want to know, and this isn't really like a least favorite part, just like a nitpick. How come we've gone backwards in terms of airplanes and cell phones? Like in 1990, you could call someone from the airplane. Down to the ground.
And it was like $4 a minute or something. Yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Expensive. Oh, no, but that's not. You know what? I think that was a flaw. You could call people from airplanes with the airplane, but it was in front of your seat.
Yep.
Like the Thornburg thing, I don't think is possible. Because like he goes in a bathroom and it's cell phone hookup. I think that was BS.
I just think it's a little weird that like we used to be able to call people on the cell phone 30 years ago, and now there is no way you cannot do it anymore in 2020. I don't understand it.
No. But that's wrong. You could call people from the phone in front of you in the seat, but it was connected.
Sure. But still.
But there's no cell phone. That was licensed.
My point is you could have made a collect call from the airplane at 10,000 feet, right? In 1990, with a corded phone. I know it was a corded phone.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think you could. I'm pretty sure
you could, because I remembered like the phones being on airplanes and stuff. I have memories of that. But and now you can't do it. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, but now you get free iPhone messaging. You just text people.
Cool.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Delta.
There's a terrorist.
I would rather be able to do that also.
Can we spend a minute on Dick Thornburg for a second here? Because I feel like Dick Thornburg is portrayed wildly incorrectly in these two movies, okay? So, yeah, he's kind of got this despicable personality, and he's very arrogant and also very insecure. And then there's the whole, like, Holly Gennaro punches him out at the end of Die Hard. And so we learn that he had filed a restraining order against Holly, and they're on the same plane together. But let's not ignore the fact that Dick Thornburg is a great reporter. This guy's showing up in Die Hard 1 to the home of the family that has people in that building, and he's trying to get thoughts from, I think, the grandma and the kids, right? And here he is on the plane. He's tapped into the pilot communication to communicate this terroristic attack to the public.
Yep.
And he's doing his due job as a journalist in America.
And gives a report that goes on forever.
He's vilified for reporting the news. Also, I want to throw in terms of great reporting in this movie, Samantha Coleman, local TV news reporter, okay?
Yep.
She's on the site of the blown-up jetliner, like 50 feet behind. I don't know how she got access to be out there on the runway. I mean, the Vikings won't even let you watch, like, team practice, for God's sakes. And Samantha Coleman's out there 50 feet from, like, 300 dead British flyers. And then at the end, she's like, she's got the footage of John McClane and his wife and stuff. So I just want to say, yes, flawed personality, Dick Thornburg, but great reporter, and it should not go ignored.
The Samantha Coleman report from the runway is also hilarious because she's standing in front of a plane on which 200-plus people have died, and she's happy.
She's very cheery.
She's like,
I'm Samantha Coleman here on the scene.
Merry Christmas to everybody out there.
There's a charred hand behind me over here.
And where she and McClane simply walk into the airport control tower is hilarious, too. Like, they take... They like gain access to it like it's nothing.
Yeah.
In 1990, that was difficult.
They're just a reporter sitting
hey,
up.
What's going on up here? You got some problems. but yeah, that was, you could, here's the thing about the first two Die Hard films. Mm-hmm. If you are not a McClane, you are liable to be mocked no matter how well you try to do your job. I mean, Dennis Franz was trying, man. He's the airport cop security head, right? But he gets mocked. Thornburg, Dick, he's trying to do his job, but he gets mocked, right? Samantha Coleman gets told to F off.
A couple times.
It's very clear that if you are not a McClane, you are liable to be mocked.
Other things that we have to note here. Actually, you know, I want to add a new question to the we have like four or five questions we ask here, right? We've got the, we'll get to the bad guy rankings. This is a question I think you guys always chide me for, like, not fully buying into the fiction, right?
Yeah.
Like in Speed, I don't understand how you'd be able to keep that thing going 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. So I want to add a new question to these action movie reviews. What was the least believable thing in this movie?
Oh, I've got it. I've got it right here. In fact, I wrote it down. I took a lot of notes. Love this film.
This is great.
Took a ton of notes.
So many things.
Go ahead, John.
My number one is this one. 1990 special effects. They actually did some good things here, okay? But my number one is when McClane is in the military airplane and they're all tossing grenades in. And yes. By the way, nobody misses. Yeah. And
he also has time to like process with like cartoonish reactions. Oh man.
Oh no.
There's nine grenades in here.
but first of all, how many grenades do they need and have? Oh, right. And by the way, that's plane three that is blown up.
Right.
While we're still a functioning airport.
Everyone at the airport bar is like just enjoying their cocktails. Let's see these like explosions happening.
Oh, the weather outside is right. Boom. But the special effect when he ejects himself. And like ejects himself above the explosion is so unbelievable.
Yes.
And not great. I mean, it's so. Well, they didn't have the capability to do it well. Yeah. So they should have been like, we got a lot of, you know, good special effects here. Let's bag that one. Believe. They didn't. So that to me, and then how he just sort of ejects himself. He like flies up in the air above the explosion, but not too far. But he has enough time to get the parachute out to descend like right by where the explosion was.
But the parachute would have done nothing because like he wouldn't have gone up high enough.
That's my point. But he went high enough.
He would have died.
He also would have been charred to a crisp. But anyway, that's my.
I've got two least believable things, all right? So, you know, part of the plot was let's stage a gunfight to throw everyone off, and we'll just have guns with blanks, and those will have blue tape, and the guns with actual rounds will have red tape. So McClane's trying to explain to Dennis Franz. It's like the ninth time that McClane is trying to explain to Franz, like, no, something's happening here. And he's like, get out of here, McClane, right? And so Dennis Franz is telling him, like, get the hell out of here. And McClane pulls out one of these machine guns and starts firing in the police office.
Yes.
And like, in the moment, you're thinking, oh, my God, he's lighting up Dennis Franz. Every cop draws their gun. But no one takes down John McClane in that moment. Nope. Like, if you're telling me that if a guy pulls out what looks to be a machine gun, you have no reason to think that it's not a live round machine gun.
Right.
And starts firing it.
Right.
That you don't immediately, there's like nine cops that they don't immediately take out their guns and shoot him. I was like, all right.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. You're 1,000% right.
And then here's another one, okay? And this is more just like the mystique of John McClane. So how many times have you guys been just sitting at the airport, you're grabbing a beer before you board your flight, and you see random people with packages and stuff, and they're going around.
Yep.
Now, John McClane's in the hotel airport. And he sees a couple guys in a packed airport.
Yeah.
Couple guys stand up and start walking and immediately thinks, those guys look suspicious.
Yep.
I'm going to follow those guys.
I'm going to follow them.
Is his radar that honed?
Right.
Or does he just like follow a ton of people at airports to make sure that they're not terrorists?
And moments before, he hadn't even been smart enough to. And by the way, he was going to wait for his wife like for a long time. Like he was going to be sitting at that bar for a long time. He hadn't even been cognizant of the fact that you don't park in a no parking zone right in front of the doors of the airport. Yeah, and he got his car towed. Right. So it's like he goes from, well, I guess I parked in the wrong place to
that guy's for sure a terrorist.
which I became more and more convinced was all part of why the film was so funny.
It's hilarious.
Because they just like didn't, they're just like, oh, it's got holes.
By the
who
way,
cares?
Casino Royale does the same thing where like, and James Bond is a trained 007 agent. So he's more trained to spot shady people than like a random cop from, you know, New York. But like James Bond does the same thing in Casino Royale where it's like, ooh, that guy walking into the security area looks like he could be a terrorist. I'm going to follow him. Like, all right. Couple other things before we get to this is the one thing that we haven't gotten to.
Please mention the fight on the wing.
I was gonna mention the foreshadowing to the fight on the wing.
Okay.
Which is the very beginning of the movie where Colonel Stewart is doing naked yoga in his living room watching CNN.
So uncomfortable. So uncomfortable.
Yeah, but it's shot right, so it's not like you see any crucial parts of Colonel Stark.
You see a lot of backside. Yeah. A lot of backside.
Yeah, but I mean, that's fine.
And so that was the precursor, so you knew, okay, this guy's a fighting machine. And then he busts out those moves that he was using naked in front of CNN on John McClane on the wing.
Yep. Great just stuff. Quickly, too, the McClane thing. So John parks his car in the wrong place. It gets towed. And then, to Phil's point, says, but those two look suspicious in this massively packed airport. Holly McClane in the plane as it continues to circle, asking the stewardess, are we going to run out of fuel? Is another
who
great.
That's
what you think about. Like, I get what?
You
like,
guys you're ever smart about enough? That. Our flight's being delayed a little bit. Oh my God, are we going to run out of fuel?
Like, I've thought about turbulence problems. I've thought about lots of bad things that can happen. But I love how the McClanes are this honed trained couple.
They sense everything.
Do we have enough fuel to make it?
It's amazing.
Oh, anyway.
Would you bite off a guy's finger? Ever?
No.
Would you have, in any circumstance?
I would find a different way.
Because I wrote it down. I was like, that part was extremely uncomfortable.
I don't even think I'd think about trying to bite off someone's finger, to be honest with you.
Also, in the age of the pandemic with that insane crowded airports, do you guys miss crowded airports at all?
No.
No, not at all. And it's funny, like, in crowded airports, the way airports used to be, this is a great The Way Airports Used to Be movie.
Yeah.
And one of them is just people just lit cigarettes up everywhere. Yep. Like, oh, I'm just going to hang out here by this TSA agent that's hitting on me and asking me out to dinner, by the way.
And there weren't two parts then, too, right? Like, you walked in, and there was a security checkpoint, but everyone could go through it. Yeah. So, like, there could be a restaurant here and a restaurant there, and they weren't cordoned off. So, but no, I do not miss, especially Christmas time, I do not miss for one second crowded airports. Yeah.
One other great line in this movie before we get to the definitive bad guy rankings. By the way, if you on air production meeting, you might want to tell Courtney five more minutes. Okay.
Yeah. I said we're going to be 5, 10 minutes late.
Sorry. We're doing a deep dive into Die Hard 2. We'll talk
Vikings. You know what? We can do the Vikings some daily. Other day. Yeah, I don't really care.
That'll be on Purple Daily, by the way, if you're listening to this, Maggie and Judd. So old guy in the church, when the terrorists start to feel out what's happening in the church.
I love that line.
The old guy goes,
old guy in the church.
Kind of feels like a piece of me is dying along with this church. Right, and the terrorist goes, well, you're right about that, and shoots him. And I'm wondering, were they planning on letting that guy live longer? But then the terrorist is like, oh, the one-liner was there. I had to kill him. You wouldn't believe what this guy said. I had to kill him.
I thought that he would get killed quickly from the moment I saw him watching TV.
Easily.
Like, he looked like
drinking his soup.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the type of guy you got to kill.
Yep.
All right, definitive bad guy rankings here. So I think we have to go a combination of Colonel Stewart and General Esperanza as kind of a tag team.
Yeah.
Unless you guys disagree.
That's fine.
Colonel Stewart's running the operation, but General Esperanza is sort of the overlord of all of this, right? So where would you guys... Hans Gruber is number one on our list from the original Die Hard. Myers, Halloween. Cyrus the Virus from Con Air. They're definitely not on that level.
Nope.
Which is what probably separates Die Hard the original from Die Hard 2. But I do think if we're looking at... They're not iconic, really, so that's part of the problem. But they are ruthless.
Yes.
And it's not like The Rock where they're just sort of fake terrorists. Now, these guys killed like 200 people on a British jetliner.
They're middle of the pack to me.
Lessons.
Are they... I'll go through some of these here as we get to like the fringe of the top 10. We've got Ivan Drago. I think Drago is way more iconic. You've got the Russian mobsters from John Wick. I might put these guys above the Russian mobsters.
I would put them above them. Yeah.
Dennis Hopper from Speed is in this mix.
I really like that.
Bodie from Point Break, Dom from Fast and the Furious, Victor Maitland from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
Victor Maitland.
I think Drago's probably where the bar should be.
You should be higher.
Yeah, you shouldn't be higher.
I'd agree with that.
Drago.
Yeah. Yep, that's fine.
Is he above or below? Are these guys above or below Victor Maitland from Beverly Hills Cop?
They're
I'd say
above.
Probably, you think above?
I think above.
I'd put them slightly below, but
I think they're slightly below. Let's put them right below.
These
right
terrorists below. Are not iconic. Like, yeah. They're good.
We'll put them right next to Paul
Here's
Giamatti's character from Shoot 'Em Up.
I got a guess here. I bet you when Bruce signed on to do this, he said, I got to be the star here. Because Die Hard, you could make a great case that it was, Bruce was great, but, right?
Yeah.
And according to Wikipedia, he was paid $7.5 million for this job.
So he was like 20% of their budget or something.
Easily.
Or
yeah.
10, whatever.
So,
it was.
Yeah, so you couldn't afford a. Mm-hmm.
So, we're,
great
so
bad
we've
guy.
Got these guys as the 13th ranked villains out of like 35 movies.
That's very fair.
And that brings us to the 1 through 10 rating system here. Die Hard, the original, and Halloween are the only two perfect 10s we have agreed upon. Taken, John Wick, Commando, Beverly Hills Cop are all a 9 or above. The Fast and the Furious, The Expendables, Top Gun, Roadhouse, Hard to Kill, Rocky IV, and Bad Boys and Independence Day and Point Break are all 8 or above. The worst movies we have reviewed, Shoot 'em Up, Bloodsport, Mad Max 2, Wanted, Rambo 3, and Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom. 1 through 10, Judd Zulgad.
I'm going to give this a sequel that I thought was slightly too long, but it was still fun, but it certainly was not Die Hard. I'm going to give it a 7.
Whoa, that's I feel like
yeah, I
might be a little
lower.
Bit low there.
Oh, I thought he was gonna have it lower.
Really?
Yes, I thought he was. It was
well, I could have easily gotten this film shorter. But the cartoon thing was fun and it was so implausible that eventually I just said, what the hell? But you know what? For a sequel, it was fine, but it was a sequel. Like
yes,
I do not want to confuse this with my love for the cinematic experience that was Die Hard.
Sure. Yeah. It's a 7 for me, too. I think it's an enjoyable movie. There's plot holes. It's very much a sequel, on-brand sequel movie where it's a little over the top. There isn't a good connection from the first one, but they still make up for it with hilarious special effects. There's a group of terrorists who are pretty menacing and terrible people. I give it a solid 7. It's a 7 out of 10.
So I love this movie, and I actually like this movie in some ways better than the original Die Hard. It's just a great
sequel. Sacrilege.
I'm gonna save this rating a little bit and give it a 9. It doesn't have a Hans Gruber, but it has everything else. If you put Hans Gruber into this movie, it's a 10, just like the original Die Hard.
Okay.
So I'm giving it a 9, which means it's a 7.7. It ranks middle of the pack. It's basically like right in the middle. It's right above Lethal Weapon and right below Code of Silence for us here.
Okay.
So there it is. Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
All right, so we put 4 movies up for vote every single week, 1 from a listener and then 1 from all 3 of us. The listener nomination, I'm going to go Demolition Man. Demolition Man was recommended by a listener. I believe that's Wesley Snipes, right? Man.
Okay, 1993.
I think that was
Wesley Snipes?
Let's see. It was Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes.
Oh, wow, nice. Okay. Yeah. Sandra Bullock, too. Dennis Leary. Wow, good cast.
All-star cast. So Demolition Man.
All right.
And then Judd Zulgad, you go ahead, throw yours out.
I'm going back to my Seagal well, Under Siege, for a second consecutive week. Under Siege. I think it came in second last week. We'll see if it comes in first this
I think
time.
It's coming second back-to-back weeks.
Well, I'm just going to keep throwing
keep going,
it out.
Though. Sure. I like
keep
it.
Throwing
I like
it out. There. Why not? Yeah.
I'm going to go with the old school one. I'm going with Dirty Harry from 1971 with Clint Eastwood.
Wow,
that's
dude.
I
usually am the guy who...
I love that choice.
I'm shocked by this.
I usually am the modern 2000s plus action movie guy. I don't like watching the old ones. I've never seen Dirty Harry, and I love Clint Eastwood. So, Dirty Harry.
Holy cow.
Make my day.
I almost want to punt my... I love the 3 that we have here.
Punt.
All right, I'm gonna throw one out there.
Okay.
I'm going to throw one out there just for fun here. I'm going to throw out, oh, man. I'm going to go with another, all right, here's what we're going to do. I'm sorry. This is great. Let's go The Marine with John Cena. Okay?
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
And if somehow The Marine with John Cena wins, then it'll still be an enjoyable experience.
I hope Declan wins.
I'd love to do.
Dirty Harry.
A review of that Dirty Harry.
So there it is. That's Action Movie Rewind. Mackie and Judd and Die Hard 2 is in the books.
They're talking to us on our own goddamn system. They got to be close. I'll have my men tear this airport apart.
Just in the nick of time, huh?
Hey, McLean, I got a first-class unit here. SWAT team and all. We don't need any Monday morning quarterback.
Hey, so Monday morning, my wife's on one of the goddamn planes these guys are with. That puts me on the playing field. And if you'd have moved your fat ass when I told you to, we wouldn't be hip deep in shit
right
there.
That's it. Security, you're out of here. So, Mr. Trudeau, do I have to remind you about FAA regulations regarding unauthorized personnel in the control tower?
All right, Pat, we're going to get your full round 2 NBA draft recap here in just a little bit. But the Minnesota Vikings have a chance to get back to 500. They got the Cowboys. Judd and I are drawing parallels to the Randy Moss Cowboys checklist game. The Cowboys took CeeDee Lamb over Justin Jefferson. So do you feel like the Vikings are about to embark on a playoff run, or do you feel like they're going to get slapped in the face here at some point with one of these home games?
Well,
No, I think they're going to be 7-5. Yes, I do. I think they're going to have a nice little 3-game winning streak here. And to be 7-5, they're playing very well. The defense has come out of its coma. That said, I saw it. I got to confess to you, fellas, I had to look this morning to see who they were playing. And this has got to be the first time the Dallas Cowboys have come to town. And I know there's no fans, so that changes things. But if this was a regular season and with people coming, this still would have been the lowest energy arrival of the Dallas Cowboys in 50 years.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, the most famous game of the strike year was, what, 82, right? The strike year?
That was one of them,
the
yeah.
Strike year?
Yeah.
Remember the Monday night game that came back? Dorsett ran 90, and Phil
yep.
doesn't, but Judd does.
At the Dome.
Dorsett ran 99 yards. That was basically, okay, this season has been all screwed up. It's terrible, but now all the old excitement was back because they beat the Cowboys in the game when Dorsett ran 99 yards for a touchdown, and it was a great game, and everything was hopping. And now you got this corpse coming to town, and it's amazing. Even if there were 60,000 people there on Sunday, they'd be having fun. But to see the Cowboys run out there as a bunch of mutts is just really amazing. And what's this? They have not been in the conference final since they beat Denny down there in, what, 95 or 6? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep, I think that's right.
Yeah, it's astounding what's happened to that franchise. And they still are, doesn't Forbes still make them the most valuable team in American sports?
Yeah.
I think they do, right?
Were they $4 billion or something?
Yeah.
Something crazy?
It's ridiculous.
I don't think anybody can get the same number of billions in sports today as they could have 8 months ago. I don't believe that because of this, because of what's going on with us here. But anyway, yeah, the Vikings have had the easy schedule now after having a little bit of a tougher schedule now earlier. But you look at them now and it looks like a football team. And one big reason is the offensive line, and the other is, okay, they lost both their pass rushers, and all of a sudden this Wanham shows up, and, they got three young guys playing the defensive ends, and those guys are doing fine. It's pretty amazing. I think they're still weak in the middle of the line, in the middle of the defensive line. I don't think there's much in there, but if you can't run again, if you load up the box like they did against the Bears and take away the run and you still can't pass against them, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm still not completely convinced, Patrick, that McCarthy is going to be safe. I know it's 1 year, but I don't trust Jerry not to completely freak. I mean, this team is bad and they look lifeless, and I don't trust Jerry not to pull the plug on McCarthy after a year. He's one guy I wouldn't trust.
Well, here's the thing about Jerry. This team is absolutely pathetic, and if they win two in a row, they could be leading the East.
Oh, I know.
I mean, Philly, how about the Eagles? The Eagles are pretty good. They go out and get slapped around last week by who?
The Giants beat them. The Giants in their own division. Oh, the division's awful.
Yeah, the Giants aren't out of it. They're 3-7. We wanted to fire everybody. They're 3-7. If they get the 7-9 is going to win that division, and 6-10 might get you a tie.
Home playoff game too, Pat. A home playoff game if you win that division. That's my favorite thing.
They still have that stupid rule. It's a prime example of that is when the Saints went up and got beat by that 7-9 Seattle team when Seattle was just starting to get halfway decent. How about watching them? They held somebody to 20. They held Arizona to 21 points last night. That's a shock with that defense they have.
Yeah.
But they came out and ran the ball. They kind of did what the Vikings have done. They went back to a run of the ball so they didn't have to expose their defense as much, and they ran the ball fairly effectively. So I watched bits and pieces of that game. I wasn't exactly fixated on it.
While you guys were talking, because Pat, you mentioned this is the most nondescript Dallas Cowboys arrival to Minnesota maybe ever. And yeah. so I think I'm just going through Pro Football Reference here. I'm looking at all these games. So the Cowboys have come, let's see here, 2016 they came to Minnesota, 2010, four. The only game that maybe rivals it, because all the other games have like Troy Aikman as the starting quarterback or Tony Romo, Dak Prescott in 2016. There was an opening week one game in 2004, I believe, between the Cowboys and the Vikings, in which Vinny Testaverde was the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And the Vikings Hell won yeah. that game right. 35-17, and it was just a crappy Cowboys team. Other than that, you go back basically to the 60s, and it's Staubach, it's Danny White, Tony Dorsett, it's Troy Aikman. Like this, but there was the one random year 16 years ago where like 50-year-old Vinny Testaverde came walking into the Metrodome.
Yeah,
right.
And you know what's amazing? When did TV decide to make them American? I mean, they started calling themselves
America's team.
But when did TV jump on that bandwagon?
70s, right? When CBS had the rights and Summerall.
They liked the uniform. Yeah. They produced good ratings. They were very popular in Vegas. I know that, betting-wise. But why did they suddenly seize that this, you know, and they back in the day, Summerall and Madden did all their games.
Actually, right? You know what, Pat?
No, Summerall and Brookshire did all that.
Actually, Pat, the Staubach to Pearson pass at Met Stadium probably helped solidify that big time.
Yeah, I think it was before then, though. I really do. I think it was. I mean, when they were emerging, I don't know. There was something about the stars, and they got the national audience, and they had the goofy, the African-American insane gentleman that was riding around on his phony little kid's horse and stuff. I mean, they gave them the advantage of playing the 3 o'clock game all the time.
Yes.
And the other thing is, Thanksgiving was Detroit for 100 years, right? And that was it. And all of a sudden, somebody at the Cowboys was smart enough. And this was before Jerry Jones to say, "Hey, we're going to start playing the second game on Thanksgiving Day," and they developed that tradition. I think that helped them too, don't you? As far as national.
Yeah.
Exposure. But it is amazing how if I accidentally click onto NFL Live or something or one of those shows on ESPN, they spend half the show talking about the Cowboys still.
And how can
the Cowboys just, they're terrible? They've been terrible for quite a while here now.
Yeah, and they haven't, I don't think they've been, they certainly haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1995. Have they won a playoff game since? I don't think they've won a playoff game in like.
No, they don't want a playoff. That wasn't, their last playoff win wasn't Danny, was it? No, they've had to win.
No, they won one going into the Vikes game in 2009. So I think, I feel like they maybe have one more in there somewhere.
Yeah,
so
but still not good.
Not good.
Remember the build up to that game, by the way?
2009?
The whole thing was the Cowboys were the team on the come. Look out now, baby. The Cowboys are playing great.
Yeah.
The Vikings beat them for fun. Yeah. I mean, they battled, 31-3 or something?
34 or something like that.
Romo.
Like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an absolute butt kick in that Viking team. And,
Yeah, they haven't been to a conference finals game. They haven't been to the NFC Championship game since 1995. Here's another one. So you mentioned the 3 o'clock games. It does seem like even if the Cowboys are crappy, they're always in that featured 3 o'clock slot.
Again, this time, right?
So this year they have 16 games, obviously. They only play 4 noon games all year this year, which is amazing. The Vikings and the Cowboys have played each other 20 times in the regular season since 1970. 3 noon games.
Is that right?
3 noon games. The rest are all 3 o'clock or primetime.
I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. It's amazing that, the Yankees are the, now, even though they haven't been in the World Series now since 2009, but the Yankees are the evil SOBs of baseball because they win, they go to the playoffs every year, right?
Yeah.
They're there every year. These guys are the evil SOBs of football. For no reason.
They're the evil. They're like the evil 8-8 team,
Marketing.
Don't you think?
You're right. It's marketing.
Don't you think I think Jones has a lot to do with it too, because he's such a despicable human being. Has got it, so that makes you hate him a little more, obviously. So,
But Pat, they're smart because they've always got something. They've always got controversy, or someone's getting in a fight, or a coach is screwing. Like that. That's the thing, is they've always got drama, and the networks love the drama. They're a soap opera.
Yeah, well, that's true. But the fact that it's the Cowboys drama makes it. Makes it special in some way, but yeah, I think are they smart enough now to be trying to lose the Cowboys or not? Or is Jerry still suffering?
Boy,
I don't think Jerry can bring himself to try to lose.
They at this point, they should.
Now, though, right?
He's pretty old.
That's a good question. Hold on, I'll find out.
He's 80 now. He's but he's still. I don't know if he still does his post game little corner press conference in the locker room after
78.
Game. 78.
He's pushing 80. You're right.
Well, he's done it down there as far as the marketing. You're right. I haven't seen that stadium. I haven't been in there, but I guess what are they? If they want to, they can put in over 100,000 people, right? Because they have to stand in the two end zones.
They're putting. I believe they had. I think they had like 35,000 fans in there for their last home game, and he's going to keep ramping it up.
That's just COVID.
Oh, that's good. Just because half the people in Texas have COVID, who cares?
Yeah, Pat.
I see my guy from Florida, Rick Scott. He just got it, though.
Yeah, he's one.
I saw
one
Holtz,
of many.
Right?
Holtz got it.
Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz got it.
I felt bad about that. I hope he makes it.
Tough for Lou.
Only thing that'll shut him up.
With most people, you don't want to be within 6 feet of Lou Holtz. I might make it 12 feet.
Oh, there'd be spittle flying out continually. That's a very good point. Let me tell you something.
Exactly right.
Phil Mackey.
Exactly right.
Pat, Ricky Rubio back in Minnesota. Your thoughts?
Let's go for it. Why not? you get rid of Johnson. That's what makes it good, right? So it doesn't cost you anything because you were on the hook for $16 million for Johnson and Ricky's $17 million, right?
Yep.
So why not? They need another point guard, and he and D'Angelo. D'Angelo won't admit it, but he's more of a two guard than a point guard anyway. Mm-hmm. But he wants the ball, but that's okay. Ricky will play what, 28 minutes, and D'Angelo played 35 minutes, and they'll play 15 of those minutes together, and yep. I think that'll work good. I think it'll be fine. And Ricky's, as I said the other day, everybody that asks, you know, how are these two guys going to play together, Rubio will figure something out. So sharing the ball is what he does best, right?
Yep.
So he'll figure something out. I think it's a good move, and it got him out from under Johnson, and if people ever return to NBA games, we still love the guy.
Oh, it'll be a big deal, yeah, with fans, no question.
Although I heard some call-ins on some show yesterday, and they were talking about how cute he is. The cuteness is gone. He's an adult now, man.
You were listening to My Talk again, Pat?
That might have been
Lori and Julia.
The mop top is gone now, right? It's more of
it's a man bun.
Yeah. But I mean, that's
the older man bun?
Yeah, I think he does. I
mean,
he's matured.
I mean, I looked it up. He's not, you know, he's not the guy to give the ball to Ricky and let him shoot. But his shooting percentage, his shooting percentages and his scoring output have improved the last 3 years are better than anything he ever did here.
Yes.
So, I mean, he shoots the ball a little better. Because obviously his big problem was he's such a great passer, but everybody in a set offense was able to back off him like 8 feet and beg him to shoot. If you do that now, he'll stand there and actually stand. He'll stand there and throw up one of those three-pointers and got a chance to make it. I think it's good. It's fine.
Too. Plus, like, basically their entire roster now that Johnson's gone is between 19 and 25 years old. And so you do need someone who's been around enough. He's 30 years old. Ryan Saunders loves him. I think the thing that we miss the most is he would get one of the great, potentially unwarranted standing ovations from a full Minnesota sports crowd.
Get those 9 jerseys out of your closet. I'm back.
I did look up the game where he popped his knee March, that season, I forgot, was delayed. That was they didn't play their first game till December 26th or something.
Yep.
Because that was still a strike or a work stoppage going on. They had 20,300 and something for that Lakers game the night that he popped his knee, and they were 21-19 at that going into that game, and they were like tied late in the game, and they ended up 26-40. That's probably certainly excitement level was the highest, but also as far as he was really playing well as far as running that offense. He had that team moving up and down the court, and that team was playing good. They probably would have made the playoffs. I think 40, I looked that up too. They needed to get the 35 or something to make the playoffs. I'm not sure how many they had to get. They would have been on the cusp of making the playoffs, and then he popped his knee. So that was a sad night. That whole crowd, I remember going,
Garden
sad,
Colby. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Gophers Purdue, who you got?
That's right. I forgot about that.
Friday Night Football, who you got?
Is that tonight?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm not, I don't know. I picked the Gophers last week. That didn't work out too good. What is all these Friday night games? What the hell?
Just get it over with quicker and enjoy your weekend.
TV programming is what it's called.
I don't think Purdue is very good. And I know the Gophers aren't very good, but the Gophers will move the ball this time, I think. And they got a shot. I don't know. Who knows?
Don't forget, it's a building year or something like that.
We've started all over again now, right? I was very surprised that Phil's guy, Phil, has gone to that angle on us. But we're a young team, and by God, we're all young, baby. Basically, you know, when you're young and horse bleep, there's a chance that you're going to be experienced in horse bleep too. You know that, don't you? Just because they're freshmen doesn't mean they're going to be good juniors.
Well, let me lay this out for you. So the first year was year zero.
Yes.
Then year one. Then in year two. This is year 2.5. This is year 2.5.
Last year became, we went from 0 to 1 to 3. Last year was 3, right? Because, I mean, wow, they had a great year. And then 4, I don't know what this is. Yeah, probably 2.5. I don't know what
it's certainly not a
minus 3.7 is what I see this as.
All I know is no matter what complete horse crap Phil throws out there, we're going to get to read it. I know that. I know that. We're never going to question it. We're just going to offer it up.
And just to clarify, that's Phil Fleck. Phil Mackey never throws out horse bleep, ever.
No, Phil Mackey has never thrown an idea out there just to create controversy.
No. Thank God they got rid of that North Carolina game all those years ago, by the way, Pat. It's great.
Yeah, right.
They replaced them with TCU, which was a better team than North Carolina ever was.
I talked to Coach Kill the other day, trying to get a phone number from somebody else. I talked to him for about 5-6 minutes, and he was in some kind of a coach's meeting, but says he enjoys Fort Worth, but they've had the bad COVID at TCU, and he said the league is just screwed up right now. That whole Big 12 is screwed up. Can we, as Americans, change the name of the Big 12? I mean, the Big 12, since it only has 10 teams in it. Can we change?
Do you want to change them to the Big Ten as well?
Yeah, the Big Ten's farther away than that.
Why is the Big 12 got 10 teams and the Big Ten's got 14? We are screwing up. It's bad enough that young people of this country are ignoring math as far as a personal skill and just always look on their computers and, always run calculators. But, we got all these dumbass kids down in the Midwest saying, wait a minute. Big 12, but there's only 10 teams. What's going on here, Mom?
Keep them on their toes, Pat.
What if we call one of the conferences the Legends Conference and the other one can be the Leaders Conference?
We can be the Legends and they can be the Leaders. But sure. I don't think. But anyway, it doesn't make any sense.
The Hayes and the Fleck.
Oh, I'm good with that.
The Schembechler and the Fleck, okay?
That's true. Okay.
All right, good Pat. Enough. We'll talk to you next week. All right, that's Rapping with Royce. You can find Royce Unchained in podcast form every single Monday, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com.
Oh, God.
Love him. And you know what's funny? Like, just to pull the curtain back. So his phone, obviously, if you've been listening to the show for any number of years, like, his phone sucks sometimes. Like, when it's a phone call.
Yeah.
And some of it might be just like
him taking it away from his mouth.
We've got like a 30-year-old mixing board in the studio.
It's also, I think he tends to take the phone away from his mouth.
That too. But him jumping into our video chats here during COVID.
Great.
The audio's better. We get to, you know, look at him. Sometimes we post video clips of it. It's great. Modern technology.
Who would have thought?
Mm-hmm.
I just love that he's concerned about the conference names as part of what America needs to do.
I thought he was going to go
in a very different direction right there. I thought we were going to go off on a tangent.
No, if I'm Joe Biden, one of the first five things I do is I change the name of those college football conferences.
Happy birthday, by the way. Joe Biden, only 78 today.
Is it his birthday today?
It's his birthday today. He's only 78 years young.
Doesn't look a day under 79.
Couldn't find a 52-year-old, 51-year-old. I'm available. I'd be happy to be president. Yeah, I'd be happy to run the country.
Whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, can we all agree for 2024, just somebody under the age of 90, like, please, someone that doesn't look like they're the crypt keeper on either side would be great. I'm just saying, like,
wow.
I mean, he is
78 years old, so. Yeah.
All right, that's
who's
a
next?
Wrap.
Jerry Jones. He's 78.
Oh, God. All right, that's a wrap on this episode of Mackie and Judd. Don't forget Vikings Ventline on Sunday, right after Vikings and Cowboys. And maybe we can get another inspirational Mike Zimmer speech at the Vikings win.
So, I heard it all week long, right? 0-9 on Monday night.
Yeah!
You like how this tastes?